The Secrets of Doctor Who is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who, where we discuss everything about the hit BBC series, Doctor Who. And today we're discussing the last four episodes of the first Doctor story, The Daleks' Master Plan. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today on the panel are Father Corey Stika. Hey, Father.
How's it going?
And Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
Folks, be sure to write an Apple Podcast review or review the show wherever you can and share the podcast with your friends. That helps us grow this community and reach more listeners. And I want to tell you about another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which you can find at mysterious.fm or in any podcast directory.
Yay. So here on YouTube at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jimmy Akin.
That's right. That's actually a great place because then you're going to see all the great work that our video editors do to insert even more content. The show is improved by the addition of such materials. So definitely check that out. So we are talking about the Daleks' Master Plan. This is our third installment of this discussion. And Jimmy, can you give us a recap of what happens at the end of this story?
Oh, this is a long one because it's got a complex ending. But here we go. This week, the First Doctor, Stephen, and Sarah Kingdom land in ancient Egypt. But the Daleks and Mavic Chen and then the meddling monk arrive soon afterwards. Chen tries to turn the monk against the Doctor to get the Terranium for the Daleks' Time Destructor weapon, but the plan goes wrong. Eventually, the Daleks use the monk, Stephen, and Sarah as hostages to force the Doctor to hand over the Terranium. Since he no longer has any fake Terranium, the Doctor is forced to do this, but he also has made a clever switch, reprogramming the monk's TARDIS to look like a police box and taking its navigation system. That will cause the Daleks to chase the monk instead of the Doctor, and it will let the Doctor use the monk's navigation system to get back to the planet Kimball. They do, but the navigation system burns itself out, so don't expect the TARDIS to function the way it should in the future. Without his navigation system, the monk ends up in an Arctic wasteland. Back on Kimball, the Daleks now have the Terranium for the Time Destructor, and they imprison Mavic Chen and all of their allies, planning to kill them as soon as the invasion of Earth starts. The Doctor goes off on his own, since William Hartnell is taking most of the week off, and Stephen and Sarah try to find him. They discover the imprisoned Council of Conspirators, who convince them that now that the Daleks have betrayed them, they will go back to their own worlds and form an anti-Dalek alliance. Stephen and Sarah thus release them, and they all leave in their spaceships, except Mavic Chen's ship explodes and crashes. Determined to stop the Daleks, Stephen and Sarah then follow a Dalek to an underground base they didn't know about, and it turns out that Mavic Chen guessed their plan and faked his ship crash. He thinks the Doctor is in the Dalek base and is trying to usurp his place with the Daleks. When he takes Stephen and Sarah to the Dalek Supreme, the Dalek Supreme announces that their alliance with Chen is over. Chen is outraged, but the Daleks surround him and plan to take him away and exterminate him. He escapes, but his freedom is short-lived, and the Daleks kill him. The Doctor appears from the shadows, having followed another Dalek to the base, and gets control of the Time Destructor, and the Daleks can't shoot him without risk destroying the all-important Time Destructor. He sends Stephen and Sarah back to the TARDIS, and he follows them, but Sarah comes back to help him, and the two head back to the TARDIS together. The Time Destructor is causing time to advance at a rapid pace, but the Doctor says he can't turn it off until the Terranium power core is exhausted, lest the Daleks used again. He and Sarah are aging horribly, and they collapse before they arrive back at the TARDIS, but Stephen sees them on the monitor and comes to help. With its jungle aging rapidly, Kimbrel is now turning into a desert wasteland. Sarah Kingdom dies and quickly turns into a skeleton, our second companion death. Stephen fiddles with the Time Destructor, but he can't make it stop, so he helps the Doctor get back to the TARDIS, and the Doctor tells Stephen that Stephen actually switched the Time Destructor into reverse, and it's now de-aging every living thing. The Daleks' outer casings collapse, and the mutants inside them de-evolve into embryos. At last, the Turanian power core runs out, and the Doctor and Steven survey the destruction the Time Destructor caused, with Steven mourning the deaths of Brett, Katarina, and Sarah, and the Doctor muttering, "It's a waste, what a terrible waste." The end.
Oh, man. Yeah. Father Corey, what is your overall impression of this one?
Well, this is quite the ending to the whole serial. Admittedly, the Egyptian part was kind of felt a little bit filler. You know, we needed to put one more episode in here, so let's put them in Egypt for it. But beyond that, I mean, it was, again, as you could probably tell from Jimmy's summary, there was a lot going on. There was a lot of, you know, going here and going there and getting this done and getting that done. And we find out how the disruptor works, that it works by basically fast forwarding people through time until they die of old age and then blow away, as we see with Sarah Kingdom. So it was a good ending, you know, a good way to wrap up the episode and everything. And of course, the Doctor wins, the Daleks lose. Unity is restored, or life is restored again.
Yep. But wow, bitter ending.
Yeah, very bitter ending. Very much so.
Jimmy, your overall impression?
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I definitely agree. Episodes 9 and 10, which are the ones set in Egypt, are filler. You know, they don't address the main plot, really. The only plot-related thing that happens in them is the Daleks get the Turanian back. And they could have done that more simply, you know, but I like seeing the meddling monk. I like his character and how he's, you know, you can't really trust him, but you know, you're not sure whose side he's on, but he's not purely evil. You know, he'll say, no matter what has happened, he'll say he was doing it for a good cause. And at one point, Sarah even acknowledges to Steven, he could be telling the truth that he did this to help us. So I like that ambiguity about him. The final two episodes, there are some plot holes in them, but you know, they are action packed. The villains get their comeuppance for trusting the Daleks, including Mavic Chen. I think Mavic Chen's motive of thinking, I mean, his crashing his own spaceship or faking its crash, he refers to it as a pyrotechnic display, so it may not have actually hurt his ship, but it doesn't make a lot of sense, and his belief that the Doctor is trying to usurp his place with the Daleks makes absolutely no sense. But it's a very effective ending. I like Chen's death. I like, you know, the dramatic Time Destructor sequence. It would be fascinating to know now I'm blanking on her name, the actress who plays
Jean Marsh.
Yeah, it would be, if Jean Marsh had wanted to take on a series commitment at this time, she would have been the new companion. And I assume that she either would not have come back to help the Doctor during that sequence, and he would have faced the ravages of the Time Destructor alone, or Steven would have been able, she wouldn't have died before Steven switched it into reverse. Because what essentially happens here is the Doctor is aging fantastically, and which we can't really see because this episode is lost, except for like telesnaps. We can't really see that, but the Doctor is apparently aging fantastically, and then when Steven switches it into reverse, it saves the Doctor's life. So the Doctor almost ages to death here, but then doesn't because of what Steven was able to do. And if Sarah had gone back to help the Doctor, then presumably they would have just not had her die, and then she would have been de-aged as well. But it's an exciting ending.
It's pretty dramatic for a, you know, mid-60s kids to programming show, you know, to kill off characters like this. You know, she's been on it, you know, several episodes here, like half of the story.
You really could consider Brett Vian another companion in this, and in which case this would have three companion deaths in one story.
Right. And that's pretty dramatic for, again, mid-60s kids programming. In some ways, I think it was more effective because of the sacrifice of Sarah Kingdom at the end, especially given what she did to Brett as she showed up. So I think it made it more effective you know, I mean, Jean Marsh as a companion, I mm-hmm. think Sarah Kingdom would have been a cool companion.
There,
but
there,
it would have made this story less, I think.
Yeah, there are, by the way, Big Finish stories featuring Jean Marsh as Sarah Kingdom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
They found ways to do that.
Because, of course, Wibbly Wobbly. Mm-hmm. The funny thing, I had to laugh, you know, when the Daleks turned on their allies, which we saw them doing throughout. It's like, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal, you know,
the, yeah.
Wash from Firefly. You know, it's just like, that's Daleks are going to Dalek, you know, that's just what they're going to do.
And Mavic Chen basically goes insane. Oh yeah, they need me, and I'm their leader now, and I'm gonna take out the Supreme Dalek because he's not listening to me. It's like, dude, you've got moving guns pointed at you. I mean, that's all Daleks are. They're guns on rollers, and they're just gonna blast you. So yeah, this isn't gonna work the way you think it will.
You know who we never got closure on is Carlton. Chen's assistant mm-hmm. back on Earth, who, you know, was kind of hinting that he was wanting to usurp Chen's place at some point in the future, but we never come back to him.
Yeah, that is a loose thread. I mean, they started to unroll a bit on him and then just kind of dropped him. That's an interesting drop. You know, Mavic Chen, I feel like, he had like a psychotic break in mm-hmm. those last couple episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that is kind of what explains his weird mm-hmm. behavior and that sort of thing that you mentioned, Jimmy. Like, I think he just lost it. Mm-hmm. He just had a mental breakdown and, you know, went full psychotic.
Mm-hmm. Up to that point, he's very suave. You know, he has this suave upper class British villain thing going. And I like the way, no matter what the Daleks say to him, meaning to intimidate him, he is not intimidated. Like at towards the beginning of episode 9, they're explaining to him that the recovery of the Terranium is your responsibility, you know, implying if he fails, he's going to die. But they tell him, this is your responsibility. And he says, I welcome it. You know, just utterly unintimidated. I welcome it. Guile and cunning will succeed where force does not. And then after he gets the Terranium back, he reminds them of that line and says, guile and cunning have succeeded where force did not.
Right. He's just such a politician. Yeah. I mean, I guess I could insert any number of American and probably British. I don't know the British politicians very well, but, you know, politicians in there and said, yeah, this is, you know, this is kind of that same sort of bluster I could picture.
Yeah. By the way, before we move on from the companion deaths, I wanted to mention, mm-hmm. I noticed a difference. So the next companion death in Doctor Who is Adric. Mm-hmm. So we go through the second Doctor and the third Doctor and the fourth Doctor with no more companion deaths. They don't all have happy endings, but they all have endings that don't involve death. And it's not until Adric's death that someone asks the obvious question. Dude, time machine, go back and save them. You know, because really? when Adric dies, Tegan and Nyssa, but especially Tegan, are, Doctor, we've got a time machine. Let's go back and save Adric. And the Doctor says, we can't. And he doesn't really explain why. It has something to do with the laws of time. But at least they hung a lampshade on it. They acknowledged, this is a time travel show, so why should a companion have to die?
Yeah.
And nobody asks that for Brett, and nobody asks that for Katarina, and nobody asks that for Sarah.
Yeah. Which, I feel like they've already kind of resolved that issue with the first Doctor, the fact that he has no control of the TARDIS. He can't go that. Back and save
that
them.
That could be.
You know, they had that directional control unit, the navigation unit, and it burns out like immediately.
Yeah.
So it's like, as you said in the summary, oh yeah, we've got this control unit, but it's gone now, so we don't have to worry about that again. He still won't have control of it.
Yeah. It would have been nice if they had used that excuse and said, right. This is why I can't do that. But they could also point out they could have pointed it out, because when Brett and Katarina die, they're separated from the TARDIS. But when Sarah dies, you know, the Stephen could have said, "Doctor, we've got the TARDIS right here. Let's go back and save her." And the doctor said, "I wish I could, son, but the Monk's directional control is burned out. I can't steer it effectively," which would have actually been a humbling admission for the doctor, because he's always dismissing, you know, the idea that he doesn't know how to pilot the ship. And here it would have been actually a touching admission of the truth if they had done that.
Right. Right. The little bit of swallowing of the pride. Yeah.
I think the real reason, though, is just the 1960s writers weren't thinking four-dimensionally.
I mean, that's the danger of a time travel show altogether, is you've created this method of sucking all drama out of every story, because, you know, if you have a time machine, then you can always just go back and fix things. Right. Yeah. If you do it wrong.
If you do it
built in.
Yeah. If you do it right, you get 12 Monkeys, and the 12 Monkeys TV show is the most, it's the, like four seasons, all of which were pre-planned. So they weren't making it up as they went along. And there's stuff that happens like in episode one, that's not going to pay off until the end of season four. And it's one enormous, monstrously complex time travel show where everything makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah. And that's the thing, is if you're going to have a time travel show, you've really got to think it out. And you get it, like, and you know, with Doctor Who, it's 50 years of patches and baling wire and, you can't do that because reasons. And we'll explain that in 10 years.
You meet yourself, you might shock yourself and zap yourself out of existence. And
yeah, exactly.
Fix time
when you don't.
Fixed periods of time and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But this time we need to have it so that we can get around it. I like the Doctor traveling to ancient Egypt. He doesn't do it very often in Doctor Who. I'm trying to remember any other time. Does he ever travel to ancient Egypt?
He does in the 11th Doctor's time. We don't really see it, but he goes and gets Queen Nefertiti for the Dinosaurs in a Spaceship adventure, which was a story based entirely on the name and isn't worth it.
Yes.
But they had a lot of sets for ancient Egypt that were quite impressive. If you watch one of the fan animations based on the telesnaps, it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know the BBC had available to them such extensive ancient Egypt sets. They're not entirely accurate, you know, like there may be a Greco-Roman statue in there, and they keep talking about the Great Pyramid, but the layout of the pyramids we see does not look like Giza, which is where the Great Pyramid is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of sword and sandal epics being filmed around, in those days on various sound stages. But although I wonder if they reused any of the set, because wasn't one of the movies being filmed in the Feast of Stephen an ancient desert? I wonder if they reused some of those sets for
I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
Now, but the tenth episode, which is the second part of the Egyptian two-parter, it does exist. So you can watch that and see some of the sets there. So
yep. There's a couple. Yeah, the Doctor has traveled to some civilizations in Earth's past, which would make fascinating stories if they went back to them in, you know, using modern, you know, filming and cinematography, whatever. Egypt, Aztecs, you know, there's so much they could do, and they just haven't done, which is kind of fascinating that they haven't bothered. I mean, this goes back to my whole
Egypt
historicals rant.
Egypt would be easier than the Aztecs because Egypt is a desert environment.
Yeah.
And so you could fake that with, you know, CGI
Spain.
Easier than you could fake a jungle, and which was what it would have to be for the Aztecs. And it would be harder to fake a jungle environment and make it look realistic without international travel.
Right.
They've traveled, Doctor Who's traveled to Spain and the Canary Islands, I think, the Azores to film in Modern Who to kind of simulate some of those environments. So it would be
in
cool.
Utah.
In Utah. So I like the, again, we've talked about the meddling monk and what an interesting addition he is, and what a shame it is he hasn't been in Doctor Who since this. It was fun to see him show up. There was this funny little moment where he ducks out of his TARDIS in ancient Egypt, squints at the sun, ducks back in, and comes out with sunglasses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the Ray-Ban Wayfarers on, and it's, or they look like Ray-Ban Wayfarers anyway. And so it's like the cool monk.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a funny little moment. I don't know, you know, whether that was thrown in there by the director or the actor, but
That's a great moment. It's not a full scene, but it's a great moment.
Yeah.
And it fits with his previous character of using technologically out of place artifacts in ancient environments.
Right. That's right. He doesn't fit in at all. He doesn't care about fitting in. The doctor makes an interesting mistake here at the beginning of this, where he confuses or mixes up. He thinks that the Daleks, he mistakes the meddling monk's TARDIS and the Daleks time machine. Daleks time machine kind of mixes them up and thinks one's following him, not the other. He's done this a couple times now, because he doesn't often have multiple time travelers.
He thought it was still the meddling monk following him, but it turned out it was the Daleks following him, because the meddling monk said he basically came at him from a flanking position in time. Kind of left the time stream and came back in, type of deal.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like all he's seeing on his tracer is the equivalent of radar echoes. So it doesn't give him a lot of information about what the ship looks like. It's just something's following me.
And once again, Sarah and Steven are taken by a third party. You know, it's just this thing that keeps when Katarina and Steven were on the prison planet, they got taken by the prisoners. They just keep getting captured by other people. But Sarah, again, very capable. Mm-hmm. I really like Sarah Kingdom. She's very capable as a companion and has agency and is really good at what she does. Steven, in fact, she kind of shows up Steven a few times. Steven kind of is not quite as capable as Sarah is, and I kind of like her as a character.
Yeah, in a fight, so they get captured by the Egyptians, who think they are tomb robbers, because the scenario we're in ancient Egypt is they've got all this stuff, which they staged near the Great Pyramid, so this is apparently Khufu's burial goods. Yeah, and they're going to load all of his treasures into the pyramid, which they may or may not have actually done in history. And they, because the TARDIS is sitting there amongst them, they think the TARDIS is one of these are just, you know, guards and slaves there to move the stuff. They're not here to question it. So they think the TARDIS is one of Khufu's burial goods. And so they move the TARDIS into the pyramid. But they think that that Steven and Sarah are tomb robbers before or pre-tomb robbers. They're here to steal the stuff before it goes into the tomb, including they're going to steal the TARDIS. And they think the Daleks are war machines that spout flames that Steven and Sarah are using. And so they capture Steven and Sarah. And Steven and Sarah at one point have to break out, and they both do well in the fight, but Sarah Kingdom does better. You know, she's a trained hand-to-hand fighter, where Steven's a fighter pilot, but he's not a hand-to-hand fighter the way Sarah is, and it says he'd like to get some tips from her in the future. But she's very capable, and in the fan animation I watched, she's like attacking the camera. You know, and so so they apparently had stills of her, you know, from the Egyptians' viewpoint of Sarah just lunging at them and stuff. And it's quite dramatic.
Yeah. Peter Purvis describes it like, you know, she chops one of them, another one she kicks. And, you know, you can imagine it, you know, in 1960s, you know, karate type.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Karate chop.
And Sarah has clearly been taught the 41st century art of disabling people by chopping them on the neck.
Yes, the classic Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Interesting about the meddling monk is how he's a rogue figure where he's not on anybody's side. He's on his own side, and he's going to do whatever it takes to get him what he needs or to make him safe. So Mavic Chen convinces the monk to work for him and the Daleks, but then he encounters Sarah and Steven, and he's on their side. But then when they're captured by the Daleks, he's is he pretending to go along with the Daleks, or is he pretending, you know, it's just, it's very funny.
Well, and I don't even know if it's pretending is the right word, because he's more like, you know, again, going to like a Star Trek comparison, a Harry Mudd, where it's just like he's going to say whatever it's going to take to get him out of that situation. If it means that he's going to work with the Daleks for a few minutes until he can get to a better situation, fine. He doesn't care.
I think that's the right analysis. The monk is making it up as he goes along. And so he'll do whatever he needs to do to survive right now. But his fundamental orientation is still towards good. Because when he meets the doctor at one point, he tells the doctor that the Daleks, he tells the doctor they're trying to use me to get you. And he didn't have to tell him that. So I think he's fundamentally is a good guy, certainly compared to Mavic Chen and the Daleks. But he also is a rogue in that he'll say anything to survive in a situation.
I did like at the end of episode 9, there was the fun fake out of the mummy emerging from the sarcophagus, you know, which was the monk wrapped up in
somehow the doctor overpowered him and got him wrapped up in all the cloth
and put him in a sarcophagus.
Again, it feels like the director wanted a fun. If we're going to be in ancient Egypt, we might as well have a mummy cliffhanger, because why not?
Now the only complaint I have with that is, you know, if I was Steven or Sarah, I'd be like, we'll unwrap his, you know, mouth so he can like breathe and talk, but leave him wrapped up so he can't go anywhere.
It's interesting to note that in this time, the doctor is the only one with a TARDIS key. He doesn't give the key to companions yet. I don't know when he starts handing out keys, but
Susan may have had one, but the other companions who weren't family definitely don't. I don't recall when he first gives out a TARDIS key on screen. It may not be until the Ninth Doctor's time.
I'm trying to think, maybe there were a couple of times like the Fifth Doctor might have or something that late, but
yeah. I know the Ninth Doctor did. There may be some earlier occasions, but I'm not recalling them off the top of my head.
There's like one or two times where they had it like hidden over the police box sign. There's like a little cubby hole up there, but
interesting.
And that might even be later New Who as well.
In any case, despite all he's done, the Doctor does, you know, reciprocate with the meddling monk and does rescue him, you know, from Mavic Chen along with Steven and Sarah. So there is that reciprocation there with him. So we move to this with the Dalek War Council. They want to evict Mavic Chen from the council.
The counselors do.
The Daleks refuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other council members have turned on Chen and want to evict him, but the Daleks don't. And that's when they arrest everybody.
Yes. It's interesting that the Daleks at this point don't want to arrest Chen, to betray him. But they are going to. They are planning to soon. It's just kind of interesting that right now they're not. Does he still have control of the Terranium?
No, they've already got the Terranium, and one of the Daleks asks the Dalek Supreme if we should just kill Chen now. And he says, no, his arrogance and bluster or something will still serve a purpose. And he then goes into the council that wants to eject him from their number, and he actually kills one of the council members. He shoots him dead and says that the Daleks have made him head of the council now. And then they come in and arrest everybody. So apparently his arrogance and bluster had a limited shelf life of utility. They basically wanted him to go in and take charge of this meeting, and then they would arrest everybody in it.
Chen has a line that feels like it's right out of Orwell's Animal Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Though we are all equal partners with the Daleks on this great conquest, some of us are more equal than others.
Yeah, that's probably exactly where it came from.
Some are more equal than others. Yeah, that's right out of Animal Farm, the pigs. Jimmy, you mentioned the Doctor disappeared basically in episode 11. Because they wanted to give Hartnell a week off.
I don't know what and TARDIS Wiki doesn't know either. They say for unknown reasons, William Hartnell is not part of most of this episode. He is there at the beginning. This is when they first get back to Kimball. You know, they've used the monk's navigation system to get there. And William Hartnell is in the opening scene, talking to Steven and Sarah on the TARDIS, but then he leaves and goes off on his own, and he's not in the whole rest of the episode. This is episode 11. He doesn't show up again until partway into episode 12. And so it's like he could have filmed that scene in one day and taken the rest of the week off. Could have been health problems, could have been a family emergency, could have been I don't know what. But for unknown reasons, he's not in most of that episode, even though he is there at the beginning.
Interesting. I mean, his time was coming to a close soon. You know, he was going to
Not you would think, but actually, no, he goes on longer. There are quite a number of stories after this. We haven't even gotten to the companion Dodo or Ben and Polly.
Yep.
Oh, right. Ben and Polly are
The last. There's still about a year left before the regeneration episode.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And okay. Steven has his exit, and Dodo is quickly swished off stage and replaced by Ben and Polly. But, yeah.
Dodo doesn't work out.
Yeah. Well, that was the perspective of a lot. But from watching her performances, I think she's a fine companion. She's a 60s teenager, and she's spunky, and I like Dodo a lot. I don't know why people didn't think she worked out.
And it might have been something behind the scenes too. Who knows?
She's in the next story.
Yes.
The massacre. That's when she shows up.
Well, sort of. Yeah. It's her ancestor shows up in the massacre. And then when in the 20th century, they find her descendant, Dodo.
Who was the same actress.
The same actress. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like a, what'd they do?
Claire Oswald.
Claire Oswald situation. Yep. Yeah.
Or Martha Jones.
Right. Right.
Or Peter Capaldi.
So reusing faces. Same, but. So Chen gets betrayed by the Daleks, the inevitable betrayal, but he's delusional. He's like, no, I'm still in charge. Like, dude, you are no longer in charge.
You know, when they circle around you, that wasn't to, you know, cheer you on. Yeah. That's you're done.
Well, and he has famous last words. I am the supreme ruler of the universe. You cannot kill me. Zap.
Yeah. Yep. I am immortal. Surprise. He actually says,
yeah. Nope. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we talked at length about about that final sequence, with the Time Destructor, and it was so dramatic. I mean, I really wish we could have gotten a look at the filmed version of that it was that episode of them all wasn't lost, because I can imagine what it must have been like, especially given the constraints of 60s, special effects. But it must have been the audio was very dramatic. It must have been very dramatic visually as well.
The wind is howling and stuff as the Time Destructor is destroying stuff. Even if we could do more effective visuals now, more impressive visuals now, it would have been very impressive at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. As things, you know, run out here, and we come to the end of this story, is this the longest of all Doctor Who stories?
So I would say yes. The Trial of a Time Lord is technically one episode longer. It's 14 episodes long, but if you count Mission to the Unknown with these 12, because Mission to the Unknown is just a setup for this,
right?
Yeah,
it's 13 episodes long. And even though it has some kind of digressions, it feels like one connected story more than Trial of a Time Lord or The Key to Time. But those are the only two rivals. Flux would be a distant third, after Trial of a Time Lord and The Key to Time.
Yeah. But that was shorter even though.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I say a distant third.
Well, that was shorter only in number of episodes, but it was almost the same. Because if you figure that New Who episodes are two Classic Who episodes.
Yeah.
I guess.
That would have been, because that was six episodes, New Who.
Yeah, and this is 13.
12, you know, so it was close. I mean, it was close, you know, but as far as actual individual episodes, no, it was much shorter because it was only six.
It was an ambitious undertaking. I mean, this whole story, this is a big story. That they did. I mean, they put all this together, and including Mission of the Unknown, a story without the Doctor in it, and all of that. It's kind of fascinating to think of how ambitious they were in trying to do this type of story. I haven't seen the on the TARDIS wiki where they talk about how it was received at the time or anything like that. Jimmy, do you remember in any of your reading how people received this?
I think it was well received. It was also, I've read that it was planned to be the finale for the Daleks, that they weren't going to use them anymore after this, but that plan never works. They tried that in Patrick Troughton's time too, and it keeps not working.
Right, right.
The Daleks just keep coming back. They somehow figure it out.
Terry Nation's got to keep getting paid.
Or the Terry Nation estate these days.
Yep.
Yeah, these days. Yeah. Which it's kind of interesting because even with the new season of the
Shooty
the 15th Doctor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shooty Gotwa, which is coming right up as you all are hearing this, that we're about to start the new season there. And Russell T. Davies has said we're not going to use, just like Christian Riddle did in his first season, we're not going to bring back the classic villains,
for this season.
And he eventually, you know, Chibnall did for the first, the New Year's special. I'm assuming Russell T. Davies will eventually also bring back Daleks and Cybermen.
There's always rumors that the contracts to use the Daleks includes that they have to have at least one episode per year or something like that they film. So.
Apparently that's changed. At least that's the impression I've got, is that they're no longer required to use them once a year.
Good.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Daleks are interesting, but they could be, you know, all of the villains, they could be overused. And so there's lots to do. There's lots of figures. If you want to bring things back, there's lots to bring back from Classic Who.
There is. I'd love to see the Web Planet again. I think that would be awesome. Mm. That was the most visually ambitious of the first Doctor stories. And really, it's the most visually ambitious story possibly of the entire classic era. And so I'd love to see the Web Planet appear again. But with the Daleks, they've appeared so often. My attitude is, unless you've got something new to do with them, don't bother.
Yeah. Someone on our Discord said, bring back Kroll. That would be fun to see a visualization of Kroll in using today's technology. That would be interesting.
And I would say there are new things to do with the Daleks. I don't think they've been exhausted. Right. You know, Power of the Daleks did new things. Genesis of the Daleks did new things. Even the most recent New Year's special, which was the meet cute where you've got Daleks in a time loop in a building, that was new. So there are new things to do with them, but just running around screaming about, you know, conquering the universe, I've seen that.
Yeah. Father Corey, final thoughts on this one?
I of course they have to use, you know, fancy terminology for something that's very common. You know, the Daleks have voice audio system, AKA a PA system.
Yeah.
You know, they, that's right. So they just got loudspeakers mounted to the outside of their ship that can reach seven miles. That's pretty impressive loudspeaker system.
That's pretty loud.
Sarah did at one point call them loudspeakers.
Yeah. Yeah. She did. And then, one thing we didn't mention is although Chen died, all the remaining Galactic Council members were able to get back to their home planets and in theory, at least raise a army against the Daleks.
Yep. Jimmy, final thoughts?
I thought it was well done, and the ending is especially well done. That last episode with the Time Destructor, it's dark, it's tense, it's tragic. Even on the musical level, there's eerie music, and we hear for a lot of it as the Time Destructor is working, we hear plinking noises that are kind of rhythmic, and then we hear a ticking clock. And even the sound design is very dramatic for it. At the end, we see the Daleks' shells collapsing, and then we see the mutants inside them in the sand squirming and dying, and they're crying out in agony. And it's like, and then we have the summation with Steven and the Doctor and talking about the deaths of the companions that they've lost and what a waste this all is, and it's a bleak ending, but it's very effective.
Yeah, yeah. it was a very effective story. Well done story, for, especially for the time. All right. So that's it for the Daleks Master Plan. And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Doctor Who, including Mary Ellen R., Robert B., Alfredo M., Elliot J., and Maria D. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Doctor Who and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And we'd also like to thank Simon Yannick, who edited this episode. So that's it from us. What did you think of the Daleks Master Plan? You can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com or the Secrets of Doctor Who Facebook page. Send an email to doctorwho@sqpn.com or visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/discord or watch the Secrets of Doctor Who on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/StarQuest Media.
It was, they were, and both we'll be, bilabial sounds.
Exactly. I said it enough. I should be able to get it out without stumbling on it. We'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the 10th Doctor and 4th Doctor Big Finish story, Out of Time 1. Until then, Jimmy Akin, thank you for joining me and sharing the secrets of Doctor Who.
Thanks, Tom.
Father Corey Stika, thank you as well.
Does Out of Time, does that include a DeLorean? Thanks, Tom.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who on StarQuest. And remember, will the Daleks never learn that all things do not work to a pattern? That flexibility can also lead to conquest.